I don't like pot
You don't
noodles.
like
They
pot
make me
noodles?
feel a bit uncomfortable.
Why?
It's like, what's in that?
Probably we don't want to know. I think that's part of the joy for me. It's like having like a Kraft mac and cheese. Like you don't want to know what's in that powdered cheese sauce, but it tastes delicious.
That sounds scary.
Oh
No,
no. That's
no,
so sad.
sorry.
Well, what do you eat like if you want like a comfort food?
A comfort food.
That's like
Chocolate.
easy. Chocolate, yeah. But that's not filling
Chocolate
enough.
beans on toast.
Oh
Oh,
God, you're so
I've had
British.
such cravings for beans on toast recently.
See, that's what I can't wrap my head around.
Or like, I guess like a pizza or maybe like a veggie
Pizza.
burger, but then also like vegetarian burgers now make me feel a bit uncomfortable because there's so much rubbish in them.
Yeah, I get that. Beans on toast. When you know, like when you're sick, like you have like a really bad cold or something, and your partner's cooking
Oh,
food for you, and but all you want is your nostalgic stuff. So when I grew up, my mom would make like grilled cheese and tomato soup and that kind of stuff. That's what I want. Jack, when I got sick last time, just made me beans on toast, beans on toast, beans on to toast, spaghettios with like sausages in it. And I was like, what is this? I don't want it. I don't
No,
want
but you
it.
need to get the SpaghettiOs. I don't know what we call them anymore. Spaghetti hoops, but that are different, like shapes from different like TV shows and stuff, and then it's better.
I kind of get that. I get that. Like the different shapes taste different if you're
It's
just
much
all
more
O's.
exciting. But yeah, I need beans on toast and then Heinz tomato soup as well. That is like, if
Yes.
I'm ill, that's like basically what I'll eat the whole time.
Yes. Have you done with like a good grilled cheese dipped in the tomato soup?
No, I feel like that would be a bit too much.
I recommend
Like a
it.
bit too like rich.
You want beans on toast.
I do.
So, but is it?
I don't know,
Would you have
I don't
cheese on toast?
know. No, I would have like just some bread and butter.
Okay. Yeah, I get that. Dipped in soup. Yeah. I just always.
I'm quite plain, but I'm very plain.
I mean, I wouldn't say I'm the most adventurous person with food, but my life basically revolves around cheese.
Cheese also makes me feel a bit uncomfortable at times. I can only eat certain types of cheese.
I get that.
Cheese is very prone to smelling strange and tasting strange. So,
Yeah, no, I get
no.
that. I
It's
get
not
that.
unsafe. Cheese is unsafe
Cheese
most
is
of the
not a
time.
safe food.
Unless it's like cheddar, then that's
I
okay.
love cheddar. Love cheddar. Maybe we should start the
Let's do it.
podcast.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Welcome to the But Why podcast, where we explore the human experience through a psychological lens by asking, but why? I'm Dr. Kristen.
And I'm Dr. Laura, and today we're exploring motivation.
Woo, which we are feeling not much of today.
My goodness. I feel like I don't have a headache, but I feel like something's squashing my brain. That's how I feel.
Ooh, I get that. Maybe it's just like the existential crisis that the world is going through is just squashing
Yeah,
your
I think
brain.
that's probably part of it. Yeah, that is
Yeah.
probably it.
I'm just like tired always right now. And it's because of just the constant existential dread. I feel like I need to be so informed, but then I'm too informed and it's like creates all this stress. And now I'm tired. And I also just got really hungry because we were talking about food.
Oh, yeah, we did talk about food for a while. I
Yeah.
suppose it makes us not think about the existential dread.
That's true. That's true.
But I get that pain of, I think, in terms of like you say, like keeping informed, I feel like I almost like avoid a lot of that stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like I kind of switch off to it because I know I get so stressed, whereas you do like the opposite and you like dive into it.
I think for there's like two things. I think it's an issue because it's an interest of mine and it has always been politics and kind of the impact on society and history, and it repeating itself has always been like a special interest of mine to the point where like it was one of my majors in university in my undergrad. I did psychology and politics. And so firstly, it's already interesting to me. So it's like really hard to avoid it. But also, so after the last election in 2020, and my mental health was taking such a dive, it wasn't just because of the election, but it was very related to, again, that like existential question about humanity and like people sucking and all that kind of stuff. And so I said to myself, especially when we figured out that Trump was running this time, I was like, I'm not going to get engaged. I'm not going to get engaged. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just like mind my own business.
You said on- what?
I tried so hard and I didn't do too bad. Like in the over the summer, but then as it got closer to the election, and then when the election happened, and you know how much rage I was feeling, and now I've just gotten more and more, and then you see all this shit happening, and you're like, well, I need to. I have like a responsibility. I'm an educator who knows about all this stuff, and so where does my responsibility end? And so, yeah, I don't know how the next. I mean, 4 years is hopeful because they've already introduced, you know, potentially having a third term for this, the Cheeto fascist man. But yeah, it's hard to balance that staying informed and health.
Yeah. And I think it resonates with me when you mention like being an educator. And I think that's something that I've noticed more of now is how if I'm informed with certain, I guess, kind of maybe a bit on politics side of politics, but more like, I guess, EDI stuff, like the sexism work that we do, that comes through in like how I lecture so much. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if I didn't have that, it would almost have less meaning as to what I was doing. Because I do generally feel like sharing this information and informing people and getting them to reflect on some of these ideas or what's going on in the world can then have a big impact on how they grew up and how they contribute to society. Mm-hmm. So I do feel quite like a responsibility in that. Yeah.
That's exactly how I feel is like, well, our roles are educators and we're supposed to be educating people on, I can hear the background scratching on the door. But where was I? Yeah, like, it's just like, there's such a push for anti-intellectualism as well, and not critical thinking and not knowing, you know, about the stuff that we talk about, like EDI, DEI, as you say, in America. And if people aren't taught those things at their university or their school, they might not ever come across it because of the way algorithms work, the way like you tend to surround yourself around people that you might be used to. So if you were raised in a certain way that did not want to address these topics, then you might not ever be introduced. So yeah, that's a big,
like. And when you say like a push for anti-intellectualism, mm-hmm. what do you mean by that? Is that happening all over?
Yes, it's happening all. I mean, we're seeing it's very linked to authoritarian fascist kind of ideals, because if you don't have an educated society, they can't fight back, right? So there are in certain countries like Hungary, Italy, like various other places, and the US, like the rise of fascist ideals, anti-intellectualism is a key factor of that. For example, I don't know if you saw my video, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, there's because they're taking away DEI, EDI concepts from everything at a federal level. Now the National Science Foundation has had to remove all these terms that deal with EDI slash DEI.
Oh my God.
They took away the term woman, but they also like even just like taking away all these, you know, perceived EDI terms like woman, black, like BIPOC, things like that. They also
When you say take away, what do you mean? Like taking away from what?
Funding. So just like or you'll have your grants pulled, or you won't grants if you include any of these words, which means the research isn't going to get done, right? Because people, this is academics, like that's how you're making money. But not
even
only,
just the term woman.
The term woman, no, it gets worse. The term bias, which you basically can't do scientific research without using that word. Whether you're exploring freaking like neurons or the sun, or, you know, bias in a like a cultural or racial sense. It's crazy.
Who, yeah. How has this been allowed to happen? And who?
It's an executive order. Trump
this was a good idea.
On day one, he just signed it and said, this is what we're doing. So now even, you know what I got to do? Because I like lists and I like being informed. So I have a list of a lot of the stuff that has been done. I'm going to read you some of the lists and I'm going to tell you about the impacts it's already had. And then I really want to get your reactions to it because like it doesn't seem real. It's been a month. We're recording this on 17th of Feb. The inauguration was the 20th of January. It's been like 4 weeks from today. And it's been so much damage. And some people I've heard saying like, oh, well, I've not seen an impact on my state level yet. I've not felt the impact aside from now groceries are way more expensive. But like, why do you think you would see an impact within 3 weeks? Of course, it's going to affect you. It's bad now. Imagine it was going to be in six months time. Mm-hmm. So I won't go through everything, but I'm going to give you like a little summary, right? So since inauguration, the immigration raids and arrests, they can now conduct arrests in like churches and hospitals and sensitive areas that used to be like protected areas. And they're shipping all these migrants, they term illegal immigrants, to Guantanamo Bay on military aircraft. And it's costing the taxpayers millions and millions and millions of dollars. And they're exporting, I guess is probably, but they're taking less people. They're deporting less people than Biden did. Like their numbers are worse. So like if these like racist people who wanted to get rid of all migrants really want like people gone, it's doing a terrible job. Number two, they've gotten rid of all DEI programs at a federal level. So there's an executive order that he signed on the first day, 14-14151, shut down all federal diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. That includes removing workplace protections against like gender discrimination based on gender or sex. So like there's a massive attacks on trans people. There's also the executive order that defines sex as strictly male or female assigned at birth.
Oh yeah.
So you can't like people like do it going through their transition can't get a passport that says their chosen gender on it anymore. Now as well, linking to the abortion thing, they've expanded things so that fetuses are now their actual citizens. So they have that kind of protection even at any like from conception, right? So it could be murder to, you know, have an abortion or something like that. There have also been loads of bills introduced in Congress by these Republican senators. There's the SAVE Act. So that's something I'm about to post on. So essentially, it requires in-person proof of citizenship, so like a birth certificate for registering to vote. So it doesn't sound that crazy, I guess. We have to prove your identity, but you have to have that and a matching license, right? Think about how many people have a different last name to their women. Any woman who has changed her last name because she got married or something like that wouldn't be able to vote under this, let alone like trans people and stuff like that who might have changed their name. HR7, which I know I've posted about, is working up for the national abortion ban. And I think this is the one that has the quote, the healthcare needs of women must also consider the needs of men. So fun. There's just like a lot, right? There's like transgender sport ban bills going on in a lot of states. Like it's not even really an issue. Obviously it's something the sport community does need to probably figure out at some level, but there's these people that just don't know anything. It's never an issue. Elon Musk has basically taken over the government. He's like illegally fired federal employees. Like it's just freaking crazy. So
like what is the like bigger picture in this? Like what's your view on like why are they doing this?
It's to roll back everyone's rights so only white dudes straight white dudes have the ability to run the country. And it's literally the only option. It's the only, what's the word I'm looking for? Outcome of a only capitalist-based society that has no legal protections for their people, right? So it's literally so that the rich can take all the wealth and just have people to work for them. It's basically like going back to like a feudal system, right? You just,
what is it? What is that?
It's like kings, like, and kings, okay, and queens, like monarchs and stuff like that. And they just had their peasants, although peasants got more work days off than us. Peasants had like 100 days off a year.
If only.
I know, right?
I just find it like how, partly like, how can they think they can do this? Like, how do they think they can do this? Mm-hmm. But then I'm like, well, they are doing this.
They are
doing
this.
They're being allowed to do this. But then, mm-hmm, it's like, it messes with my brain a little bit because I just find it so hard to believe why people would want to do this, like, to the human race.
Yeah. People are evil. I don't believe that humans are just good natured. I think that we evolve. We're an evolved species, right? We're animals. We're not like, we can and do consider things like philosophy and values. That's hardwired into us, but we're not just naturally good, you know?
No.
And
but then it's almost like then even more painful to see people who do think that, like, Trump is trying to do good or actually trying to help. And it's like, that manipulation, mm-hmm, I think, is really hard.
People have been
process.
So propagandized. But also, I think there have just been some terrible people out there. As you know, there's been the propagandized people. There's the people that are threatened by change because they don't even realize this, but they're threatened by other people taking up space that they consider theirs. And then there's just the horrible people that are, like, literally online. You see people are just happy about, like, migrants being torn from their families, kids being separated from their parents and being shipped off to Guantanamo Bay. And you're like, what? How can you be happy about this? Like, it's crazy. So it's literally the only outcome that was ever going to happen. Yeah. And unless, well, and people, and like they said this, so like Steve Bannon said back in 2019, like, if we get in again, we're going to do the shock and awe approach, where we just basically are constantly throwing stuff out there, like scandals and scandals and scandals and just like random stuff, while in the background, they're rewriting legislature. They're, you know, doing the stuff that's going to have long-term impact. So people are so focused on what's going on in front of them that they're, yeah, not seeing the, like, the stuff
literally
underneath.
Like a magician.
Literally. It is literal, just like fascism magic.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. No, we don't want that.
It makes it sound a bit more fun, I guess. But,
like, I guess if we're going to have fascist dictators, we may as well have some fun with it.
It might as well be magical.
It might as well be magical. Oh, yeah. So it's really bad. It's like, I forgot to say they're abolishing the Department of Education.
Oh, yeah.
RFK Jr. is now the head of Health and Human Services, and he's an anti-vaxxer who also thinks that depression medication, so SSRIs, are harmful.
Okay.
Yes, it's it ain't good.
It's quite exhausting, really, isn't it?
This is why I'm so tired, I think. It's like, you should see. Yeah. You're like, yeah. No shit, Kristen.
That makes sense.
It's like, you should see my list. It's pages and pages and pages. And I just add to it every single day. And I'm sick of
it. You add to the list. You should make that, like, publicly available.
That's not a bad plan, actually. I could do that.
I would love to see that list. I'd be like,
don't want
to trying
to
keep myself informed. They'd be like, I know Kristen's list. And then go lie down for an hour.
Yeah, you would have to.
Yeah.
So there's my little rant, but yeah. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, on a side to that, did you have some good news you wanted to share.
Do I ever?
With the book.
Oh, yeah. We've got a book out. Have
you... you sound so unexpected. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So Laura and I have recently done a book chapter for this book. You can't see it if you're listening only, but it's called Coaching Stories, Navigating Storms, Triumphs, and Transformations in Sport. We wrote this a year ago, maybe
yeah,
more.
It must have been
2 years ago.
And with Amy as well.
With Amy, yeah. You guys
know
Amy.
So Amy
now.
who was in our last episode.
Mm-hmm.
So we all wrote this together and it was fun.
Yeah. And we wrote about reconciling a coach-athlete relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what was really fun about this chapter was that at the beginning, like, it wasn't fully academic, I suppose, in a way. Like, at the beginning, it was more as telling a story about, like, a coach-athlete relationship. And then the second part of the chapter was kind of linking that into theories and linked into, yeah, coach-athlete relationship and
I feel
care
like
and things.
Writing the story was, like, the hardest part, I feel like.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's like too much you could add in.
Yeah. We're like, how much detail do we need to add here? Especially like the autistic need for context. I'm like, well, if I am reading a story, I was reading a book yesterday. Claire Sager is the author and she just provides so much detail. And I'm like, I love this so much. Like she was saying, like I was having dinner and then parentheses put exactly what she was eating and like the spices used. And I love it so much. But another fun thing, I don't know if you remember that we did this when we were writing the story. So like essentially the book chapter is like a story. And then we like Laura said, like explore it through theory. But in the story, we had characters with very gender neutral names.
Yes.
So that we couldn't, like the reader wouldn't put their own assumptions of gender on the characters. So that was interesting writing that way as well.
That was a fun spin.
Yeah. What were their names? I'm going to go through it.
I don't know. Sam like and Alex.
I was literally going to say, I want to say Sam and Alex. That's exactly Sam. And Taylor.
Oh.
Taylor, nice. Fancy.
Bit of a twist in there.
Not an Alex. What a twist. Oh, gosh. Have you had anything exciting go on? Because this is the first time we've recorded since December.
I know. Have I had anything exciting?
Or just nice or fun or anything you want to rant about.
Nice or fun. I feel like I've just been in such like, I don't know, like just trying to like focus so much on doing work that I don't really like pop my head up very often to actually see what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
But I've been building some Lego. That's been quite nice.
Oh, that's fun.
So building Barad-dûr.
Nice.
So we finally started that.
Is that what you got for Christmas?
For ages. I got it for my birthday, so ages ago.
Yeah,
but my thing is like I always feel like I need like the perfect time to do it or to like start something. So I'm like, I need a certain amount of time, or I need like a good like solid like you know deep focus time to do it.
Yeah,
but then I eventually was like, I'm never gonna get that time. I'm just gonna have to start and like just see where it goes.
So yeah, because you break all your mental health rules about working too late and working on the weekend and all that kind of stuff. If you followed your rules, you would have time for your hyperfocus into Lego.
That's what I need to do. But oh well. But apart from that, no.
Apart from not following your own rules.
Apart from that. Trying to break down my rules. Apart from that, not much is going on.
Yeah, it's that tough time of year where it's just like teaching, marking. Like, and the weather is grey because we live in England. So
it is. It has been particularly grey lately.
Yeah. I need sunshine. Jack and I were talking over the weekend. We're like, we need some sunshine. We need to book a trip somewhere.
We've booked a trip to Slovenia, which I'm excited about.
Awesome.
So for the summer.
Ooh.
So we're going to go for, I think, like 10 days or something.
Oh,
so
good.
That'll be nice.
Awesome.
Because we didn't really go abroad last year.
Yeah, I feel like you haven't done much. You didn't travel much last year.
No, like only with work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you did
so
a lot of work
loads
travel.
Of work, but then not for fun. Mm-hmm. But anywho's.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And now you don't have to travel and go to a conference and speak to people at the same time.
Yay, can just relax. That would be great.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. But maybe off the back of us being so busy, is it useful to say that we're going bi-weekly instead of weekly?
Yes, I think that's...
So,
yeah.
We have recognized, basically, that it is so hard for us to find time in our calendars where we're both actually free. So we're like, crap, we're just going to have to go every other week instead of every week.
At least for this, here we are. At least for this semester, because I think that, like, our teaching timetables do not match at all.
It's completely different.
Yeah. I'm like, I have all day on Tuesdays free. And you're like, maybe no. I could do, like, if we go till like 6 p.m. Like, yeah. Our mental health, we're going to practice what we preach and switch to every other week for at least until probably like April time, you know, spring, early summer. And then go from there, check in, see what we're doing. But we're going to try and provide you guys with as much good content as we can without breaking our brains.
Yes, that's always the aim, trying to break the brain.
Yeah, great.
And I suppose with that, is that a segue into motivation?
I guess. I suppose.
This is maybe the best one we're going to get.
I guess that's as good as we're going to get.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we are going to talk about motivation today.
Which is Laura's, like, expertise. I can't even say enough about how it's just Laura's, like, esteemed.
Yeah. See, I find it funny that is. I do really like it.
You base every, like, decision or reasoning in SDT, self-determination theory. As you've said to me multiple times, just explains everything. You've even said
I think it does explain everything.
You've even said it on the podcast. I could probably play it back to you.
I think it does. I would not say I was an expert, because I think there's a lot of stuff I don't know, but I do love it.
That's something an expert would say.
And I do think it explains everything.
Yes.
But,
yeah. And you know. Now you're going to explain the theory that explains everything to everyone else.
The theory of everything and nothing. No, everything. Yeah, okay. So, well, I suppose, so we're talking more broadly about motivation. And as like an easy, I suppose, definition of motivation, we can think of it as like a reason for acting or behaving in a certain way. So why do we do what we do? Why do we... I don't know, why is Trump doing what he's doing?
Because he's a sociopath. Really?
We will not understand that by the end of this podcast, just so you know, we still will not understand. But we can try and understand, why do people do what they do? But it can also be around, like, inaction. So a lot of the work that we might do, if that's with athletes or just with, say, people trying to exercise more, it can also be, why is there inaction? What are people getting stuck around? So there might be something, and we can probably all think of something that we want to do but struggle to do more of. So why is that as well? So why are there some things that we can do really easily, whereas there's some things that we might get a bit more stuck with? That could be any sort of behavior, from like getting out of bed to climbing up Everest, you know. Any of those things.
I mean, I can give you a lot of reasons why I'm not climbing Everest, but maybe I need therapy so that I have the motivation to want to go up Everest.
I'd be too scared. Yeah. I'd be too afraid. Thanks. Nope, not for me, but appreciate those of you who do.
I'm sure we have a lot of Everest climbers listening to us.
That's what I was thinking. That's for you.
Yeah. Shout out, guys.
So as Krista said, we're going to be specifically talking about a theory called self-determination theory, which is the theory of all theories. No, I don't think it's actually called that. But it is probably one of the most, I say, like, popular, like, psychological theories, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's been used across, like, so many different areas. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a bit, I suppose. But I think when we think about motivation, I always feel like there's such, like, misconception around what, like, motivation actually is. Mm. And you get a lot of people thinking that it is, you know, like, I guess, pushing yourself, like, to your limit, or like no pain, no gain, and things like that. Whereas I think in reality, things like that, or motivational statements like that, only work for some people. And I think in reality, it can actually lead to a lower quality motivation. So perhaps it does get you up and gets you doing what you want to do. Maybe it does get you to the gym, for example. But what's the sustainability of that? Mm-hmm. And so we'll talk a little bit about this like high versus low quality motivation and how that can impact, say, like your well-being and your mental health as well as we kind of go through.
I was just linking everything you said to like my well-being is your SDT, like kind of in terms of like interests and like stuff like that. And I was just thinking like you just need good quality motivation to have well-being for it to exist, for there to be positive well-being. You just can't, like it links back to our burnout. If you've got poor quality motivation,
totally,
it just grinds on your well-being and then can lead to burnout.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's one of the biggest kind of, I suppose like one of the biggest takeaways I get like from like self-determination theory and kind of some of the mini theories within it, when we're looking at like the, how long-term is that behavior we're doing? And then that risk of burnout if the motivation is low quality. So I suppose maybe we break down, well, I'll give you a little bit of background as opposed to self-determination theory, and then we'll go into a bit more about what we mean about like high and low quality motivation. So I suppose we've got to mention Desi and Ryan. I never know if I say them. Is that how you pronounce the name?
You're asking me. I pronounce almost everything wrong. I can't even remember the word I'm looking for half the time, let alone pronunciation.
I'm going to pronounce it like that then. Hello. Desi and Ryan. D-E-C-A.
How cute is this?
Yes.
So that was cute. My mom got me this for Christmas, but I usually sit. I'm sorry, I just got like, you know, when it suddenly starts digging into your back.
Yeah. I've got a cupcake.
Oh, that's so cute.
My
You're making me
made
hungry
it.
Again. Oh, that's awesome.
I know.
Okay, sorry,
so
guys.
Desi and Ryan. You know. So I think the kind of the formalization, if you like, of SDT, so we'll call it SDT for now, was in like the mid-1980s. And it was originally kind of researched more in like, I suppose, education, like work settings and healthcare and so on. But start coming more, I suppose, into sport in terms of like performance and well-being. Mm-hmm. So when we think about, again, like motivation, but how is it impacting, I suppose, outcomes, like results and so on? Because I do think that it's kind of controversial, as we'll go, not controversial, but maybe paradoxical, we could go on to in a little bit, is that you think like to get this really good quality motivation, you need to be pushing yourself as hard as you can. But actually, it's much kind of finer balance than that, and really understanding why you're doing what you're doing, and getting, I suppose, like what we might call like intrinsic motivation. So I suppose, should I give you a definition for that now?
Yeah, I think it would be really helpful for people to understand the difference between intrinsic and extrinsic motivation.
So there's a continuum for SDT, and it's kind of more, I suppose, more detailed than what we're going to talk about right now, but we'll just kind of give you some overviews. But ultimately, at one side of this kind of continuum, you've got intrinsic motivation, which is arguably like your higher quality motivation. So intrinsic motivation is basically means that you're motivated by something that's internal to you. So something that is important for you in terms of your own enjoyment, or you value what you're doing. You feel like you're learning, or maybe even like you identify with the behavior that you're engaging with, right? So you're doing it because it's kind of coming from you, like it's something that you intrinsically want to do. As opposed to on the other end of this continuum, you've got extrinsic motivation. And this, as you could probably guess, means that you're being motivated by something external to you. So an external means. So this might be things like what other people think if you turn up or not. Or
that would never motivate you, Laura.
Oh my God, that motivates me for like, that's the only reason I wake up is that. I care way too much. Oh, also this one, not wanting to let people down. That motivates me a lot.
Yeah.
Doing it because somebody might have told you to do it or because you feel like there's this expectation on you. So this might well motivate us to do the behavior, right? But we're very much driven by like guilt and shame. So I'm doing the behavior because I feel like I have to, rather than me intrinsically actually wanting to do that behavior. And you can probably feel now, like as we're talking about, that you can almost get that feel for how much more stressful it is to be motivated by that extrinsic motivation as opposed to the intrinsic. And this is then when we talk about, you know, how this can be quite damaging for like well-being and mental health and so on. But you might still get the behavior for a bit. Like you might still see that behavior happening for a shorter period of time, but there are certain kind of risks with that.
I have a question. How does, because we've linked it almost into like the shame and like social behaviors of humans that are hardwired into our DNA being like a massive motivating factor in like motivation. How does it relate to like other external factors of motivation? Like, oh, I want to win this medal, or like, I want to like go on this holiday at the end of the year, or you know what I mean? Like getting something external that, I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, well, what's your understanding of that?
Well, I'm just thinking, I would assume that it would be still, if it's intrinsically motivated, like I'm just linking it to like goal setting, right? So like, if you really want, so I'm just, hopefully this makes sense because I'm just word vomiting right now. So I'm thinking like, say, let's say like a medal, right? Like if you wanted like a national medal or something like that, but it's motivated by like your insides, you just really have this burning need to do it, rather than like your parents' expectations. So I guess it is still maybe socially motivated. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you can almost have like that in between, can't you? So it might be like, okay, maybe I want to win the medal because I identify with, I don't know, being a winner, or like this is something that I've always wanted, right, my whole life. Like maybe it's kind of that sort of thing. And I think that can be a high, I wouldn't say it's purely intrinsic motivation, but say it could be a high, still a higher quality than being driven by someone else. For example, I'm doing it because I'm being told to. I'm doing it because I really want to be the best at this thing. So I wouldn't say that it's necessarily like a low quality form of motivation. But I suppose if you don't reach that goal, you don't get that medal, then perhaps then it's when it becomes a little bit like damaging, if you like. I don't know if that's the right word to use, but when it can become more challenging for that person. And I think it's all about like a balance, because if you think about sport, like you can't really have sport without the extrinsic elements of motivation, because there is usually a scoreboard, there's sometimes, you know, like ranking systems and so on. Like you can't get away from that more outcome, like externally driven side of sport. So I think it's trying to like balance that then with some more intrinsic means or higher quality means. So we always talk a lot about like values, don't we? So how can we get people to understand the deeper meaning behind why they're doing something, rather than it just being like, I'm here to win. But then it's recognized we cannot take that out of sport.
So it's like it's like what we say all the time, like probably at least every other episode. It's about the process. The process is the motivation. So for this sport, you have to love your sport. You have to love going to training, not every second of every day, obviously, but like it's obviously the medal is awesome, but you just love being that athlete or doing that stuff. That kind of vibe.
Yeah, I think so. And I think this is often, and I don't know if you get this, but I think this is quite often where I was going to say athletes, but you know, I think it's just people in general. I think sometimes we do get, probably like we were just talking about now, is we get a bit kind of caught up or lost in like the work and getting things done and doing the tasks, and then we almost forget this like meaning behind what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that is when things can turn quite extrinsic and when we become like on the edge of this kind of burnout. So I do think it links in that way. Yeah.
Okay. I have four questions, but I don't know if now is the appropriate time.
Did you say four? Specifically four?
More. I have two more.
Like, I have four questions to ask.
Well, I did have three questions. Now I have two questions.
Yeah, no, ask.
For now. I think maybe now because we're on the topic of motivation and we're going to move. Yeah. It's probably to broader topics at some point. So I was thinking when you were talking about intrinsic and extrinsic motivation and applying that to the neurodivergent community. Because as we know, most research has been done on and by neurotypical people. So I like tend to like try and take everything like this is a very established theory, right? We know that. But how it works in a neurodivergent brain might be slightly different that we don't know. So I was thinking when you were describing intrinsic motivation to me, all I could think about is when I get to hyperfocus and just like engaging in a topic that I'm passionate about and just purely engaging in that for hours is just like, that's like, that it's pure intrinsic motivation. So I don't know what you're, I'll ask my, I guess it's not a question, but it's like, what are your thoughts? Like, do you think hyperfocus ties to intrinsic motivation?
I mean, I have no idea based on like research and literature, but I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like you say, it's almost like nothing else matters. Mm-hmm. Like we shut off, I suppose, again, like opinions of others, and we are just purely focused in on what we're doing. And if there is that enjoyment there, then I think that that is a key thing.
Mm. Yeah. I think hyperfocus is like a major factor of autistic joy. Like if people aren't able to engage in their hyperfocus, it's no good. And then the second thing I like, did you have something to say?
Yeah, but
I could see your wheels turning. Oh no.
My brain. What was I thinking about? Anyway, no, you go. It might come back.
And number one, last one. When you were talking about the extrinsic motivation, I was thinking a lot about demand avoidance in, like everyone experiences a bit of demand avoidance, but when you're like neurodivergent, demand avoidance is like a physical pain. Like it's like, for those who don't know, demand avoidance is like being told to do something. And it's like that feeling that we've all had probably like as teenagers, like you were about to unload the dishwasher or wash the dishes, but your parent tells you to do it. And you're like, now I don't want to. Like that, it's like that, but like on a much bigger stage. And I can just think about like the extrinsic motivation of being told that I have to do something if I don't want to, just like, and how I just think it would be really interesting to examine that in the neurodivergent population specifically because they experience demand avoidance, or some people do, like really intensely.
Yeah. And it makes me think of some research that looks at, I suppose, well, intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. But basically, if you have someone who is already intrinsically motivated to do something and then you give them something extrinsic to motivate them, so maybe you're then going to pay them for that thing, or they're going to get a reward at the end of it in, I don't know, they're going to get some pizza if they do it.
Then sounds great.
Actually, then they lose that intrinsic motivation.
Interesting.
So I think some of the research says like if you extrinsic rewards can be useful to motivate people who are not intrinsically motivated in the first place. But if you have someone who is intrinsically motivated to empty the dishwasher, which I cannot believe ever existed, but let's say you did.
I get intrinsically motivated to load the dishwasher. I really enjoy it to the point where my autism, I had like a therapy session after my autism diagnosis that comes with it. And they say, have a joke like, do you have a system or like joy, or do you have a thing about loading the dishwasher? And I was like, well, of course. Who does it? And then I realized that's not normal.
This is interesting because I wouldn't say I have a way to load it. But if I come to the, if I go to the dishwasher and I see that Matt, so my partner, has loaded it a certain way, I will redo it.
So you do have a way to load it.
But I wouldn't say that, like, I do. Or I wouldn't say, like, I enjoy doing it. Mm. But I don't like it when it's not how I expect it to be.
Yeah. I probably have to say, like, I don't enjoy doing chores, right? But when it's not done right, I know.
That's it. That is more the thing. It's like, something is not quite right here. Yeah. I need to change it.
It's not efficient enough. The knives are supposed to be on the left. The forks are on the right.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Exactly.
Anyway, sorry. Well,
it's even worse with that sometimes. Like with Matt, he'll put, you know, he'll put a plate in, but it's not across the same things. It's like wonky. And I'm like, how can you,
Jack does that.
How can you put a plate in wonky into a dishwasher?
It needs to be like in the same level. Why is it diagonal?
I
mean,
I feel like this is just common sense, but you know.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but apparently it's tizzy for shizzy.
I don't even know what that is.
Autism. Tizzle for shizzle.
Now we know.
Now we know. I mean, it's so cool.
So, so I think that's quite a fun bit. What I was going to say before is that I also think, because when you were talking about, I suppose, hyper-focus, is that if we are enjoying ourselves and more intrinsically motivated, then that can also link to flow experiences, which are, of course, really, I guess, quite important for sport and performance as well.
Like linking it to the workplace and stuff as well. Any performance. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, totally. So maybe on that, should we move on to the mini theory? One of the many theories.
Yeah, okay, so many.
So I think there are 6 mini theories in self-determination theory. We're just going to talk about one of them, which is called basic psychological needs theory. And it's great. This is what I feel like, this just, you can just see your life through basic psychological needs theory, mm-hmm. and you would be having a great time, maybe.
Be having a great time. No, you would be having a great time.
Definitely having a great time. So basically what it says is that we have 3 basic psychological needs, and when these needs are fulfilled, we will experience the higher quality motivation. So if you're sitting there thinking, all right, so I want to be intrinsically motivated, how can I get there? This kind of explains, I suppose, to an extent, how we can move ourselves along that continuum. So how can we experience higher quality motivation? By fulfilling these needs. And these needs are, so autonomy. So this is all about choice. So being able to make your own choice about why you're doing things. So are you being told you have to do something, or have you chosen that actually at this point in time, I do want to empty the dishwasher, or is someone telling you to? So if someone's telling you to, that's not really, you don't have much autonomy in that. Then we've got competence, and this is all about whether we feel we have the skills to complete a task. So do I feel like I can complete this task or behavior well?
And the answer for Jack and Matt loading the dishwasher is no, they do not have the competence.
Maybe they think it's a yes though, and they're like, I can do it. Maybe they don't actually realize how difficult it is.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
They don't realize how technical it is. It's just that false male confidence.
But what I think is interesting with competence is that, you know, and I suppose it makes sense, but I think it's interesting that if we are given a task which is too difficult for us, then our, you know, our competence just drops. And of course, that can really impact our motivation to then engage with that. So making sure that it's not too easy, because that's also not great for our motivation, but making sure it's just at that right level. So it can be quite hard, I guess, to kind of get that. But one of the things which can help that is the third need, which is relatedness, or sometimes people might call it like belonging. So feeling like you belong within, let's say you'll go in a certain group, or you're going to, I don't know, the gym, or you're on a football team. Do you feel relatedness or belonging, or like a connection within that group? And I think this links a lot to like trust and I suppose elements of psychological safety as well. So do you feel that trust and belonging within in the group and also just feel supported by them?
I have a question. Are these like fixed or relative? Because I'm just thinking about, I relate a lot to the autonomy and competence side, but not necessarily to the relatedness side. But then I thought, actually, no, I do. It's like, it's just because my social interactions look different that, you know, it's like the relate, I don't need to feel like all the time, like that I'm socializing or like, you know, when we were talking about like the social well-being aspect. But then I was thinking, actually, if you're tying it to the quality of the social interaction, and we're able to talk about stuff of meaning, stuff like that, then there is that true, it's like true relatedness. Yeah. It's not fall relatedness. Yeah. So yeah, I just, that was just going to like pop into my head.
I think that it is different for different people for sure. It's like, even if we think about, I guess, the autonomy side, some people will hate it if you just say, just do whatever you want. It's not like, you know, you have all the choice in the world. It sometimes is about saying, okay, this person might need a little bit more scaffolding or a bit more support, and I'm going to give them a few options because too much choice actually might overwhelm them. Mm-hmm. So it is also about making it, fit that person and kind of what works for them. Mm-hmm. So it might be, for example, maybe we wouldn't want to be in like a bigger group where we don't know everyone, but actually being in smaller groups where we can have more, yeah, like say meaningful conversations, like one-on-one with people. I would say that that is still having a sense of relatedness in that sort of area or activity. Or sometimes it's even like, you know, like you and me, like talking, like even just texting each other and messaging about like random stuff, like we're messaging each other about like Lord of the Rings or like a meme that we've seen. Like I feel like that still engages you with a certain interest and kind of gives you motivation to then like engage with that, because you have other people in your social circle who are also engaging with that. And I think that makes me think of like the accountability side of things when we're thinking about if we're starting, trying to reach a new goal or whatever, having accountability and having others to kind of support us along the way.
Enough accountability that you're feeling that relatedness and you have the support, but not too much that it's a drag on your autonomy.
Yeah, totally. And that you don't just then end up doing it out of guilt that you haven't, right?
Just like, that just makes me think about, and this is why I never want to be a boss or like a coach, like how hard it is to coach people to like be a boss in a business. Because firstly, you have all these different people who have varying levels of needs, whatever their basic needs are, like different relatedness, autonomy needs. And then you have to like figure out how to enforce this in a way that, whether it's just keeps their performance level or progresses their performance, is just like, I that just sounds like hell to me, is trying to figure that out for so many people. Like I can do it on a one-on-one basis or like for a team and give them the tools to do that, but having to actually do that in the role of a boss where you almost like have to tell people what to do rather than help them figure out how to do, which is what we do.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get you. And maybe there's something in there around trying to empower people to understand their own needs. And so in terms of these three needs, trying to understand themselves within it. And what does that mean? So I suppose you could say that's giving them autonomy. So it could be something around that.
How would you do that if you were like a coach or a boss or something? Just putting you on the spot casually.
I feel like it's almost, and I might be wrong with this, but I feel like in, say, like a business setting, it's perhaps a little bit easier because you can, I don't know, maybe it is some sort of like workshop that you do with them or a meeting that you have with them. Whereas I feel like, and I suppose you could do that in like coaching, but sometimes it's like you don't want to just make it seem really serious and like it's an educational session. You want it to be something that's meaningful and that people can kind of experience for themselves. So maybe it is around reflecting together in like groups around these three different needs. How do they think that it gets fulfilled? And again, by doing that in groups, you are also hopefully building connection and belonging with those people. Yeah.
It's almost what like you know what you know what you're doing.
I just made that up.
Just made that up after like only reading probably thousands and thousands of pages about SDT.
Oh yeah.
It's just like for me, I don't know if there's like a hierarchy of what's more important or if they're all equally important or if they're different for different people. But for me, everything is about autonomy. Everything is about choice. Everything is about like control over your own life, and whether that's just myself and my schedule. So for example, at my new job, I work at a new university now. If they just kind of like, here's your expectations, but we're not going to micromanage you, right? We're not going to be like checking in constantly where you are, like what you're doing, stuff like that. And it gives me so much more motivation on my days not teaching. I'm still researching. I'm still doing all this stuff. Whereas if I was told to be doing X, Y, Z, I like constantly felt like somebody was checking in on me, maybe not. But then it also like extends the autonomy side back to like what's happening in the States and just taking away people's basic rights over their own bodies. You know, that is just like has such a visceral impact on how I interpret things. And so I don't know. I think maybe for me, obviously competence is big because I like literally can't stand when people are talking shit about stuff they don't know. And I like to feel like I know what I'm doing before I do it. But so I would maybe like put them in a hierarchy of what I focus on more, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I don't know where mine would be. I really don't know. Maybe like a competence part. I think that I thrive off believing that I have the skills to do something, because if I don't feel like I do, then I'll probably panic or feel like anxious that I'm not going to do it. But then also the relatedness part, so there's somebody there who's like giving me validation for then what I am doing, or being supportive if I haven't done something as well as I wanted to. So I almost feel like they might be more important to me. That's the autonomy. But I don't know. But then if the autonomy wasn't there and I was being made to do something I didn't want to do, then maybe that would then impact the rest of them. But I do think they all link so much.
Yeah, they're all linked and they're all important. But I think there are just maybe, and obviously other factors will impact what ones are maybe more important at that time in your life and stuff like that.
Yes. And I think also like in different contexts, so different contexts, different ones might feel more important, but maybe that is because you're lacking something in a certain environment, which makes it feel more pressing.
That's really interesting, because like a lot of what we do gets tied to like our individual experience, right? So like, how can I improve my own autonomy, competence, relatedness? But actually the environment has such an impact on this. How do you think environments best like foster? Because what you're doing is, if you're fostering the basic psychological needs, you're fostering well-being. And you're fostering productivity. There's a reason that when we're going into like high level sports teams, the first thing we tend to focus on is basic needs and well-being, because they're so related to performance and outcomes. But also focusing on the outcomes alone doesn't contribute to either well-being or their psychological needs / motivation. It's hard to go into these places and be like, no, we understand that you have a goal in mind, right? But really we need to peel back the layers so much more and address the very basic stuff and improve well-being to improve productivity. You can't improve well-being if basic psychological needs aren't being met.
Yeah, totally. And I guess this is where there's the research on, I suppose, motivational climates, like specifically, and like what that might look like. And there are a number of frameworks, I think like Target framework looks at building motivational climates. But one thing that I talk about a lot, and I probably go on about too much, but is about need supportive communication. So, and I think this is really useful for if you're working with any types of with any human being, like how are we communicating it in a way that is supporting these three basic psychological needs? So it might even be I suppose, like, given examples of statements you can use that provide choice, or how we ask questions in a way that isn't kind of going against the needs, or we would say like thwarting the needs. So I think need support communication is a nice way to zoom in on, yeah, how are we communicating? So something that we will do all the time, are we really thinking about how we're saying things? And this might even be like, say, for example, we're giving somebody advice. Have you asked them if they actually want that advice, or if you can provide a suggestion? So even small things like that. So yeah, like I used to do some work on like an exercise referral scheme with like practitioners who basically prescribe exercise to patients. And a lot of that is around, how are you not just saying to them, here are the exercises you need to do, but actually giving them options, giving them choice, asking them what their opinions are, you know, things like that, which seem super basic, but doing that rather than just saying, okay, here's what you need to do, is trying to get this like deeper understanding as to their autonomy and competence and so on.
You saying like how basic that is, but it's something that gets so overlooked, right? And at an individual kind of organizational and societal level, this might be a bit of an aggressive question, but like, do you think that like these broader systems that we live in, so capitalism, patriarchy, fast-paced world of everything, do you think this just like really conflicts with our basic needs?
Yes. Yes, it does. Yeah, 100%. And I think that's what makes it, so hard, is that we're like constantly fighting back against just society, I suppose. Yeah.
It's hard because like, and I say this to clients probably with usually within the first or second session, if you're feeling anxiety, any depressive symptomology, if you're feeling like you can't, you're not even aware, right, of your feelings or your needs, that is normal because our brains are not evolved to live in the society that we currently live in. Because they're basic psychological needs, our brains are designed to receive autonomy, relatedness, and competence throughout our entire lives. And that's literally, like you said, rooted to the stuff that's in most of our DNA. That's like a social constructs is like same shape. See, I told you I couldn't speak. Things like things that like moderate our society in like smaller groups never used to be like laws and like all these external thing. It was internal feelings of shame that would make you avoid hurting somebody, or joy that would make you engage in a task. And like, we just don't have, unless you're living on an island somewhere, which actually sounds great. Actually, yes, I saw somewhere in New Zealand is trying to get people to move to a remote island that only has 50 people on it. They want to increase the population there. So if you work from home, I'm like, interesting.
That sounds great.
So, what are your thoughts on that?
It's just this feeling that we are always kind of going against the grain. And it's, you know, I suppose, like you say, like self-determination theory, like meeting these needs, it is something that is within us. Like it's our, we are trying to, I suppose, grow and always develop, like, I suppose, as human beings. But actually, what's getting in the way? And it probably is just how society is built, how we're being forced into quite rigid ways of working, or having to fulfill certain roles and so on. And some of these things can be really fulfilling. I'm not saying like that they're not, but it can take quite a lot to find the right environment for you where you do feel like your needs are being met.
And we're not saying that means you're comfortable all the time, right? Because you're not growing. Because like a lot of people can take this stuff out of context and be like, oh, well, I'm not 100% happy in my work. I don't get everything I want. Like they're not my besties. Like, no, uncomfortable experiences are part of being human. It's more about like the overall approach. Definitely. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's also, do you have support kind of socially for those challenges that you're going through? And is that actually, are you willing to experience that discomfort in the pursuit of something more? Like, is that something that you want to be doing? Or are you feeling this discomfort because you're being told you have to do something that actually you really don't want to? And obviously there's some of that stuff that we just have, you just have to. But I think for those bigger, I suppose the larger amount of times that, or yeah, the bigger activities or what we're spending most of our life on, I think ideally we want to be working towards something that is meaningful and we care about. But then I say that, and I think, well, that's a very kind of privileged way of being. So.
Yeah. We're so lucky that we kind of fell in. We didn't fall into it because we worked our asses off. But at the same time, we found something that we can be intrinsically motivated to do and make money off of to survive in a world where you need a certain kind of capital to exist, right? But not everyone has that opportunity, and they're literally just working to get a paycheck and support themselves. I just kicked my trash can. It's probably so
loud. I thought
loud.
I heard something. but yeah, and I think as well that, like, if anyone's thinking, you know, maybe you are in like a job or something that you don't get these needs fulfilled by, but perhaps it's fulfilling, you know, like you need to get paid, like you need to live and survive. Then I suppose it's thinking outside of that. How can you look at how your needs are met? So where are the times where you, maybe there are little pockets or certain spaces or environments where you do feel like your needs are met, and how can you use that kind of to your advantage to almost balance out the times or the spaces where you don't feel like your needs are being met?
I agree. There's like, there are some people that really don't care what they're doing for a living. They just want to make their money so that they can enjoy their off time. But I think that's also quite privileged because that's a choice that they're making. I just want to focus on this, make money and enjoy myself in my off time. And then there's people that just literally doesn't have that autonomy, that choice, because of the way society is structured. Like in the States, even your healthcare is tied to your work. So if you don't have a job, this is how it all ties. This is, capitalism literally is in direct conflict with SDT and basic psychological needs. Literally, if you don't have a job, then you don't have health insurance, right? So you can't survive unless somebody else is telling you what to do. It's just like crazy.
Yeah,
it's kind of switching, I guess, to like a little bit more positive look at this. Do you ever do much on, what's it called? Oh, autonomy, supportive leadership. I find it so important and interesting.
Yeah, not loads. I've looked more into like autonomy, supportive coaching, but not like
probably quite
leadership
similar.
Specific.
Yeah. Coaching's leadership, isn't it? I think it's probably quite similar.
I would think so.
I just think, for whatever reason, that I probably, because of in my hierarchy, autonomy is like the biggest thing. But like whenever I'm seeing bosses or coaches do stuff that just gives so much autonomy and it helps. From my point of view, autonomy supportive leadership actually filters in and out the right people in like an organization. Because if you're giving all this autonomy to people and your leadership style and they're not making, you know, the marks that they need to for the company, then they're either fired or they leave, right?
Yeah.
So I think broadly, like an SDT informed work or school or sport organization environment filters in people that are right fits.
Yeah, totally. And I suppose off the back of that, I suppose like some things which might link from like an autonomy support coaching viewpoint, it's like the coaches might be like moving decision-making power, say like to the players, for example, but importantly, like opting to use their ideas instead. So it's not just asking for what other people think, but actually acting on it as well. And then it can also be things like empathizing with them. So empathizing with like negative experiences or emotions they might be feeling, or kind of role modeling it and letting them know, you know, like I felt that way too. So recognizing emotions in that sense can help to build this kind of relatedness, I suppose. And then also kind of rationalizing decisions. So that's something that's quite easy to do, but sometimes we don't. But it's like saying why is something a certain way it is, giving the reason behind it, not just saying this is how it is or how it's always been, but rationalizing the decision making. And I wonder, on that, should we go on to some reflections?
Yeah, let's do
does
it.
Does that work okay?
Yeah, sounds so, good. As long as you're happy with, you know, I feel like you could talk about SDT for 8 years. So, and I feel like we barely scratched the surface.
We can come back to it, can't
That's
we?
True, but, yeah.
Yeah, maybe some reflect, because I think that, like we've been saying, it might be different in kind of different environments. You might feel more strongly towards one of the needs than like another and so on. So I suppose some reflections that might be useful is thinking, firstly, like what areas in your life do you think you're experiencing high quality motivation? So that more intrinsic motivation, and perhaps like why do you think that's there? And then thinking about like what activities do you think you engage with out of extrinsic motivation? And how does this impact you? Like, do you think it negatively impacts your well-being? And I suppose thinking, is there anything that can shift or change there for you? Or is that something that, you know, just has to get done? But perhaps recognizing how can you maybe turn up some of these activities that are higher quality motivation? And is there anything you can turn down that is a lower quality that might be negatively impacting you?
I like that, picturing it as like dials, because it also allows you to conceptualize that it can, you can just turn it a little bit. Like you can engage in this thing that you like a little bit more. Or if, you know, if it's not feasible to completely get rid of a job that you hate, you can maybe take on tasks a little bit less, stuff like that. So yeah. I really like it. But thanks guys for listening. As usual, we probably have more questions than answers, but we really enjoyed exploring motivation. I enjoyed having Laura educate all of us on motivation. Did this leave you with any questions? Make sure to comment and let us know. We'd also love to hear if you have any topics you'd like us to explore. So please get in touch if you do. Please be sure to like, follow, engage however your platform allows, and tell your friends. All of this really helps us kind of reach more people who might want to learn, but why. You can find us on various social media platforms. The link is in the bio of our Instagram page and in the show notes too. And remember, the first step to understanding is asking, but why?
Yay!
Woo!